I'm Jeremy Chapman. I'll be the guy up here with the funny accent for the next 45 minutes. I'm a director in the Office 365 team from Redmond, Washington. Flew out just to talk to you all, so thank you for coming. Joined by John Maunder.
Hi, John Maunder. So I work for Microsoft UK. I'm a technology solution professional. My core focus is productivity. And here today we're going to talk about Office 365 Pro Plus. What's new in 2016 and beyond?
All right, so what are we going to talk about? Let's show them what's going to happen in the next couple of minutes. So modern productivity, what's new in Office 2016? So the first thing to kind of grok and remember is that Office 2016 is what we call the new set of apps. We've got Office 365 Pro Plus as a main theme that we're talking about today. But we do have to put a line in the sand and call those the 2016 apps, which Office 365 Pro Plus includes. But there are some differences that we're going to talk about of what it means to be in Office 365 versus in a perpetual or volume licensing type SKU of Office.
So some of the other things that we're going to talk about are the adoption challenges. So we're going to talk a bit about the feedback that we've heard from both our customers and our partners, and of course our field engineers. And also some of the servicing options we have around 2016 and how they've changed.
So what's in Office? Let's have a look at kind of what the past looked like as opposed to what the current world looks like today. So we think about in the past, we had to wait for new versions of Office to get something built. And I know a lot of you might have asked us questions, things that you wanted to have in earlier or recent builds of Office where you're like, I really like what's in Office 2007, but wait, when am I going to get this net new thing, this new version to, say, customize Office? We'd say, maybe it's going to come in the next release, or maybe a release after that. Today, it doesn't work that way. Today, we are constantly iterating Office in new ways, not just on the desktop, but also in mobile, also in the browser. And that's an important message, because you're going to see, even with Office 2016 versus the Office 365 versions of Office Client, you're going to have deviations as to what's available in the 365 SKU versus what's available in 2016. So we're also looking at supporting new ways of working, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we see across industries, people are working differently. They're coming up through colleges, schools, universities. They're used to those snacky apps. They create content quickly, and they also share it quickly as well. And in order to keep up with that kind of innovation, we need to change the way that our software development life cycles work. And we see this as an example in Office 365 Pro Plus, which we'll talk about.
So part of what we've actually built Office 2016 around, and some of the main themes that you're going to see, is Office, we say it takes the work out of working together. What does that actually mean from an IT pro context? It means sharing's actually built in to the apps, and we're going to see that in a couple of demos in a minute. It means co-authoring. We're taking that even more seriously from a rich client perspective than we had in the past, where it was asynchronous. You have to save every time you want the changes to take. Skype meetings, Skype content being integrated throughout. OneNote, sharing notebooks. And if you're in education, how many people are in education? A couple of you? The work that we're doing there in terms of enabling education and teacher professions and also professors, university, to be able to share notes out amongst all of the attendees of a class is amazing. We're doing a lot of work there in terms of making that process very straightforward and easy. And also Office on any device and really enabling you to work from anywhere.
So some of the other things that we've concentrated on with Office 2016 is actually how we bring the desktop up to scratch too. So having Office 2016 work really, really well, have that integration with Windows 10 too. And just on that point, we have a session, one of our last sessions, about the cloud-ready desktop that will talk more in depth about Windows 10 and Office 2016. But just the highlights of the likes of Cortana. So having that personal digital assistant and how that integrates with Office 2016 and the back-end productivity platform. Also with the single sign-on, so Windows Hello, bringing in the security aspects of it and also giving you that convenience of being able to sign into Windows and your back-end Office platform with a single look at your computer or biometric swipe of a finger. We've also started to bring those innovations of Windows 10 through to mobile devices. So those of you who may have seen the Lumia announcements, having Continuum and the universal applications of Office work together and how actually we can take a mobile device and render that to a full productivity experience on a desktop with just an adapter and that phone.
And finally, when you think about works for you, it sounds like marketing, but what does that actually mean? It means you want to actually take what we call the office graph to actually get predictive about how we're delivering you information. And you saw the demo with Satya in terms of showing Delve Analytics and what that means. One of the most exciting parts of that demo for me as a technologist is we can actually look at, during a meeting, how many people are sending emails and multitasking and not actually paying attention to the meeting. So we can give you a score on how well that meeting went. That's just one example. How many people are actually reading the email that you sent to 10 or 20 or 30 people? You can get those analytics back to you. Beyond that, cloud integration. We've got things like Tellme that have been around for a while in the web apps, and then now they've come to rich clients that let you actually find functionality, not just help files within the Office apps, but actually find functionality that you want to find to do things, whether you're trying to do spell check or word count or some of the things that might be hidden in the different ribbon contexts. These are things that users can find very easily within the apps. Some of the other things that we've done in terms of integration are we're going for more modern attachments, and what does that mean? Well, I want to be able to send links to a file, because one of the easiest way for data to leak outside of an organization is via attachments, especially if they're not encrypted or not using rights management against them. What I can do now is basically send links to users. They have to basically connect to centrally stored files. They have to have edit or view permission in order to get to those files. That way, if I send an attachment to John that's protected, and he forwards that on to someone else that shouldn't have received that, they can't view the file until they're authenticated into it. So these are all natively built into Office. So really, the cloud connectivity story gets stronger and stronger all the time. And we're going to have more examples of this even beyond this session at the end of the day today.
And actually, just on that point, how we can use the cloud to also follow us around. So those most recently used documents. So what we have here is a bit of an example video. So we just go into this video here for us. And what we see is here, we're creating a document and we're saving it back down to our desktop. So this is just a local file save. But what we can then do in terms of understanding the content that we're working with and being able to easily find it. So if I'm going through Outlook and I'm creating some content very quickly, if I just pause this here, what we can see here is our most recently used documents. So using a central store for our content, and also that identity piece that knows who we are, and also what we're working on. So what we see here, even though a document may be embedded down in a C drive, My Documents, a few subfolders down for a working project, actually those most recently used documents are being surfaced straight away into those applications. So here's an example of our most recently used documents in Outlook. But this persists across Word, PowerPoint, Excel. So what we're actually able to see here is we're able to get to our content very, very quickly, and then to throw that directly into our email.
And as easy as this kind of sounds in terms of why wasn't that there earlier, this is one of those things where, again, from an engineering standpoint, we've had roaming files, roaming most recently used document lists, or things that are stored in the cloud. This is one of those things, though, even though it looks fairly simple and straightforward, it saves you probably in magnitude of 5 to 10 minutes a day if you're attaching a lot of files. Because I might not have known where I stuck that file, again, if it's in a deep subfolder off of the root of C. These are things that just save you time, because it's just there.
Absolutely. But then there's this concept of, well, okay, should I be storing my content locally? What if I store it in the back-end cloud service? So the likes of Excel Online here. So here, in this video, what we're seeing is that our content is being stored in either OneDrive for Business or SharePoint Online. So we get that Office Online experience. Mm-hmm. And we've taken the share capability and we surfaced it through to the in-app. So we have that control available in the surface area that we're working in and being able to very, very quickly share with the people that we want to collaborate with.
And the nice thing with Excel being online is it's always going to be stored somewhere centrally because it can't actually work otherwise. And all those changes as you're making them are getting committed in real time and saved, so you don't have to worry about any file save issues. So that's another advantage in terms of being able to do this in a central location.
Some of the telemetry that we actually pulled from the usage of Office and canvassing our customers and partners and also the field, what we found is that actually more people are sharing this content because we surface those controls forward. So rather than having to dig around in the backstage in the controls, making it a lot easier for people to go and share and collaborate by actually surfacing the controls that they need to be using.
And that's especially true on the rich client. So in terms of all of Office 2016, if you remember in Office 2013, the share button would be hidden in what we call the backstage. So you'd hit the file menu, you'd have to save it, and your save location would have to be central in order to be able to share the link. So you have to select a SharePoint online or a SharePoint on-prem or a OneDrive location. Then at that point, you'd be able to share. But that process, those multiple steps, not a lot of people really wanted to use initially. It took a while before people could figure that out. And now it's one step. It's literally in the upper right-hand corner. We see one dialog, it's one click, it's going to be storing that file in a central location for you. I can literally start typing a person's name, see them from the people picker list, right from my Azure Active Directory in this case. So it becomes much more, it's much easier to use, much more apparent to the user that that's there, because it wasn't as apparent in 2013 or even previous versions with add-ins in 2010, et cetera. Now it's just kind of a fact of life that it's right there in front of you.
So this really takes away from having to have locally stored files and then use that storage in our backend, potentially our Exchange systems. The old way of collaborating was sending multiple emails out, multiple versions, but now where we have that central storage, surfacing that share capability, we're actually able to then bring people into the content, mm-hmm. the document. So with our real-time co-authoring capability, so we've had real-time co-authoring, or we've had co-authoring inside of Office Online, Excel, Word, PowerPoint, OneNote, etc. But we're now bringing that forward into the desktop client. So what we see here is that capability to now co-author with real-time typing inside of Word.
And this actually means the document has to be stored centrally for this to light up. So that means that I can see, as you saw there with Karen Berg co-authoring, I can see exactly where other authors are. I can have more than one author. I can have several authors in the document. We still do the same operation around locking portions of the document, and making sure that we can do conflict resolution, all of that stuff at the back end if people want to save on top of each other's changes. There's a lot of intelligence behind it in terms of how that works from a portion locking of the document as well.
Absolutely. And it's great if we know where our content lives. And of course, we can then go there, or we're being brought into that content by our colleagues. But also, we have a capability of surfacing content and documents out to our end user bases with Azure Machine Learning and the Office Graph, and of course, our Delve application that leverages that.
And there's a lot of other examples of machine learning as well. Things like clutter, things like knowing which documents are important to you in email. I mean, this extends through what we're seeing here, Delve in this case, to be able to surface up the documents that I'm working on, things that my colleagues, my peers are working on. One of the great use cases that I have personally for Delve and personalized insights, if I go away from the office this week, I'm in the UK and I come back, I don't have to have coffees with six people to see what they're working on. Assuming it's teamwork, it's something that I've got the ability to see anyway, because I've got permissions of the file. I'll be able to see files that are important, that are trending around me, that are trending around my team, in order to stay up to date without having to take everybody aside and say, hey, what happened last week while I was away?
Sure, so it's not just about searching for content and knowing where it is, it's also having that content come to us. So we have a platform for that, to make a collaborative experience really and truly collaborative, being able to connect everybody together.
And I think one of the exciting things here, and this is what you see is what you get, is what that acronym stands for. We're moving away from that paradigm of having to actually dictate the exact formatting, where images are, how large they are, how large the text is in relationship to the images. Sway is a great example of that. And Sway recently, we've got the ability to save Sway in Office 365 and really manage access to that. It's been a public thing for a while now as well. We're really taking Designer and the algorithms and the things that we do in terms of observing designers and putting that in the box, so that you don't have to have the aesthetic and art and design skills in order to create beautiful content. By the way, it doesn't stop with Sway. This is something that you're going to see even more updates in the near future on other applications, really getting more intelligent about incorporating designer skill sets straight into the algorithms of how the docs can actually take images, take text, and put them in a better format so it looks more visually compelling.
So these are some of the capabilities that we have coming or have arrived already for Office 2016 and the Office 365 productivity platform in the cloud. But also what's crucial is all those controls that we have for IT. How do IT manage and control things? So what's new in Office 2016 for IT? Security. So we have that capability. We always had the capability for data loss prevention in Outlook and in Exchange Online. And we've now brought that into SharePoint Online or OneDrive for Business. So that capability to actually go ahead, create a blueprint of your data, and then have policies wrapped around that to ensure that that data can't go outside of your organization, that it can be controlled by the business and the IT admins.
And what it means realistically also is that if I've got things like credit cards or personal identity numbers, those types of things that I'm working on, and we see a lot of, in media, larger companies like Experian and various credit institutions, banks, et cetera, Target in the US, where they've leaked out, and in some cases, obviously unwittingly, and unknowingly, they've been hacked in terms of credit card information getting stolen, et cetera. As you're working on content that might have this kind of protectable or protected data, it will actually flag the user. So if the user is working with credit card information, maybe it's in a spreadsheet tab they don't even see. It's, you know, six tabs over. What we'll do is, while you're working in Excel, we'll actually be able to interrogate the content, see that there's credit card information in there, and inform the user that there's something in there that they need to protect. And then they'll actually find it, and they'll see a message that says, there's credit card numbers in this document, for example. Then what we can do at the back end is actually put more security controls on that. So I can clamp down the sharing of that file, for example, to just the author of the document, and make sure that it doesn't go any further out into the organization in order to leak out further.
And it's not all just about automatic controls and those policies that we can put in place. We also want to surface that to the end user as well through the client.
Yep.
So using information rights management, actually that protection that we have there, we can surface that through. So it's not now just about enforcement, it's also about education too. So making sure that your users are aware of how data has been classified and can be managed, the permissions that they have on them. Now, we've had this this concept for quite a while. It's been available through Outlook, through PowerPoint, through Word, and it's actually bringing it brand new to Visio as well. So there's a bit of an extension there to these capabilities.
And multi-factor auth, I bet you there are probably half of the room has been asking, when's it coming to Outlook? I want to have the rich client multi-factor auth enabled. Now we've actually got that done. So in the 2016 clients, when you try to sign in, if you've got MFA enabled in your tenants, or through other means, through Azure AD, people will be served with a second factor of authentication screen that you have to then pass through in order to log into mail or other applications that sync to OneDrive for the first time. So that means that we can do things like either call your phone number, send you a text message that has a code to enter, or if you're using the phone factor or the multi-factor authentication app on your phones, and we've got them across all platforms, you'll be able to authorize that app for the second factor to get into your mail stream or your OneDrive for Business stream.
Absolutely. So what we've also got coming here is that capability, as we mentioned before, we need to make sure we sustain a way of taking product feedback from our customers and our partners, and then turning that actionable feature sets and upgrades. And one way we do that is using our click to run update options. So we have that in Office 2016, we had that in click to run 2013 also, mm-hmm. and we've made some new updates to that based upon our feedback.
And there are a huge number of things that we've done in terms of just feedback from IT in general. Anybody here using System Center Configuration Manager? Just a couple of you, so you're all using other stuff. Okay, well, System Center Configuration Manager, a lot of people are asking, well, hold on, people don't self-install applications for Office in my organization. I push it out to them, or it's part of my standard Windows desktop image build that I have in SCCM. These are things that we could do in the past, but there's better integration coming. We'll talk about what's coming there in terms of things like Bits support for updating. We also have better controls around managing activations. So somebody calls the help desk. Now with Office 365 Pro Plus, and also in 2013 for that matter, I get 5 installs of Office across PC or Mac. If I want to ask a user, hey, can you tell me how many machines you have activated in your user activation console, most users will say, they'll scratch their head and say, what's that? So this way, the actual help desk employee or the person taking the call would be able to say, oh, I can see, John, that you've got 5 installs. Therefore, your 6th one, if you want to take that 6th install, you have to deactivate one of your existing installs. Here are the lists that are there. Which one do you want me to do? That wasn't possible a few months back, so that's now built into the service. And then the update management, we're going to talk about that at length in terms of some of the feedback that we were hearing from a lot of customers, a lot of enterprises especially. I can't take feature and security updates every single month. It's too much risk for my organization. So we've aligned with the Windows 10 servicing model to be able to do monthly, or not, to be able to go from monthly updates to updates every 4 months, three times a year, to make it easier to be able to incorporate those updates. And we're going to talk about that at length here at the end of this presentation.
So that's a bit about the Office applications and what's new in 2016. But in the context of actually the cloud platform, how our productivity platform of Office 365 can have a richer client experience, we also have Office 365 Pro Plus. So that is the locally installed desktop client that matches the feature sets that you see with our traditional versions of Office, like the MSI.
And beyond.
And beyond.
It will have even more than the 2016 shortly, where you've actually got features that are added in addition to what you would see in the perpetually activated, whether it's retail or volume licensing editions of Office.
So again, having that capability, having that flexible update mechanism coming from the cloud, means that we can now take your feedback and turn it into product updates and feature sets that we're making available more rapidly. So no longer are the business asking for a feature, 5 to 7 years later it's appearing, maybe it needs to go into market for a couple of years before organizations take advantage of it. Actually now we can take that and shorten that life cycle and make sure that you get the business value that you're paying for out of the client.
But what does all this mean for IT? Because we're all in IT, there are adoption challenges with any version of any new software that you have to roll out. So what this means in terms of Office is there are a couple of core things that we look at. Again, based on your collective feedback, we've added the ability, or we've maintained and sustained the compatibility of previous versions of Office for any apps that you have or add-ins that you're running against things like Office 2010, 2013, Office 2007, even if you're running that. The COM add-in model is basically unchanged from 2013 to 2016. It's one of those things where it's kind of a non-news item, but it's important for a lot of you that might have 100 or 1,000. I have a bank that I work with in the US that has 7,000 different financial related add-ins that they need to continue working. These are still going to work. Moving into Office 2016, the model doesn't go away, and all of the object model that we have, 20,000 plus objects that you can call, are all there. I mean, we've basically kept it exactly the same from 2013 to 2016.
Absolutely. So one of the other things that we've done here is where we had these larger release cycles, of course, Office lasts in organizations for a lot longer. Therefore, the buildup of work effort in order to transition from one version of Office to another, that also increases. The number of man hours increases, the amount of work effort, the number of add-ins and documents, and the performance of Office needs to be managed. And then, of course, they're so disruptive. Having that rip and replace of deployment, making sure that you have to go around to the users and actually allow them to understand what's changed in Office, run that training, run that adoption. This is disruptive, not just to IT, but also to the business as well, having new versions of productivity. We really need to see what we can do about maintaining a level of performance whilst we transform our IT platform. So on the basis of this kind of feedback, we really want to move away from just focusing on deployment and actually once you're over that hurdle, start looking at how you just manage Office ongoing as a life cycle rather than having to worry about the next major disruptive updates.
But there's still a balance here because people need more time than a month to test feature updates in a larger organization. That works for home users a lot, but if I want to actually make sure that I'm aware of the changes in the UI or anything else that might hit my user, even if a button moves a couple pixels to the right or to the left, these are things that I need to be able to assess. So now we have more options that we'll exhaustively talk about in terms of servicing that give you several months to evaluate as opposed to 1 month to evaluate those changes.
Absolutely. So as we move past just having deployments, we look at how is the update model going to be affecting actually the likes of network bandwidth? Because of course we update more regularly. How do we make things more distribution aware? So fine, I have the update, I need to update all of my clients, but how do I actually push that across potentially a global organization? So how is that better managed? Then, of course, we look at the help desk effort. So how do we simplify those activations? Because it now works in a different way. And our next session around a deep dive of Office and the deployment options, we'll go into activation in a little bit more detail. And then, of course, we've talked about the flexible update model. So we'll talk a bit about the servicing branch we have there.
And one of the cool things, going back to that slide, if you want to go back one sec, the enhanced distribution. So a lot of people are running on-premises things like System Center Configuration Manager with distribution points. I can actually actively use the cloud as a distribution point and just send setup out to my client PCs if I want to. This really comes in handy if you've got branch sites that don't connect to the hub model or people are working from home. You can actually use the internet pipe of that user's machine as opposed to having to use a VPN connection to get Office bits from your SCCM environment onto their PCs. So there's a lot of new options now in terms of using our bits and cloud hosting service in order to get Office out there if you're moving into 2016 on maybe a newer version of Windows.
So let's take a little bit of a look into how we're better managing that network traffic. So the main issue was how actually, even if you do bring that down locally, and of course we have the likes of Delta binary compression, so we're really reducing the update from the client build that already exists. So for example, if you have version 16.1 and you're looking to go to version 16.2, because the Office client is intelligent enough to understand what it doesn't have and what it needs from the network, whether that's local or from our content delivery network, it can apply a compression. So therefore, really reducing the amount of data that you need to pull from that update. But if you multiply that across thousands, hundreds of thousands worth of clients in your network, we still see that the potential for network saturation.
Right, and if you think about the what we have seen actually in the past, one of our kind of marquee even case study customers that we had in Switzerland had the case patch Wednesday rolled around the next day, and some of the updates were around 300 plus megabytes per user times 10,000 users. If you imagine 8 a.m. that Wednesday morning when they walk in, that is terabytes of data that needs to go over the network. So of course we got more intelligent, not only about, like you said, compressing that update itself, because we know what version we're coming from and what we're going to, so we can reduce the amount of kind of duplication within that build through compression, but also building in background intelligent transfer service and better intelligence inside of Config Manager and other tools to be able to manage the updates themselves, how they're rolling out across collections, and using bits distribution to trickle them out sometimes over days, weeks, months, depending on how you want to set up bits. So providing more flexibility and more options to be able to throttle network traffic according to what you need.
So taking that concept again of System Center Configuration Manager, of course we have distribution points, we have network file shares that we could potentially be drawing from, and also we could be using the SCCM cache, so locally downloading that content onto a machine and allowing an install cycle to happen locally rather than from a network location. But actually having it distribution point aware, being able to take advantage of the application model and the integration we have with SCCM, we've made some more advancements there too.
Right, and you used to, I mean, if we go into the mechanics of it, and we'll talk about it in the deep dive next session, but you used to take away things like the source path as to where you're installing Office from, and then SCCM would distribute that out to their DPs, it would install locally. But it was still a bit of a guess as to whether or not it would go from the local source, if I should define a hard path and use DFSR to maybe put it in a local file share somewhere, because I am doing a straight file copy. Now we're using all of the goodness and the integration side of SCCM to leverage all the work that they've built over the last tens of years in order to do that in a more efficient way, again, based on how much network throughput I can have. One of the other advantages that's coming is WSUS publishing also of the updates, so I'll be able to see and pull in those updates in the System Center. In the past, if you've done anything with Click to Run in Office 2013, you'd have to know which builds are available, then download those builds using the setup.exe tool with a download command and bring them into a kind of a storage area within your network, then point to that for SCCM to take hold of it. Now, as we publish to WSUS, that means it's all natively something that SCCM can consume and know which updates have been published for that month. So a lot of great things coming in terms of making it more similar and more familiar with what you're doing with other Microsoft and other products in general.
And as we then take that focus through into the end user for IT, having simplified activation management. So previously, with our licensing model, user subscription licensing model around Office 365 Pro Plus, it gives you the capability to run on 5 PC or Mac devices, plus the mobile devices, plus the tablet devices. So that's quite a lot. And as such, we saw users who are going home and activating Office based upon a corporate device. And that's fine if an organization wants to do that, maybe potentially it's a benefit of actually the user subscription licensing. But of course, then you may have a spouse's or a child's laptop activation, computer activation, university activations. You're using that license over and over again. And then when you come into work, potentially you'll then have a new laptop. Maybe you lose a laptop, you get redistributed with a new laptop. Then you come there, you come to that activating office, and you find that you've run out of activations. So then there's a help desk cost of calling through to the help desk. This version of Office that I need to use for work isn't working. I've got this pop-up notification. I need to deactivate. Previously, we had end users managing that. So of course, a help desk would have to go through and actually manage and control how that was deactivated. Now with activation management, we have that surface through back to the administrator.
I would say ideally, you want the end user to manage it so they don't have to call you in the help desk, right? But in the event that the help desk call does actually come and the phone does ring, you at least have the tool to go in and not spend as much time as you would have either remote controlling their computer or telling them how to get to the activation portal to deactivate a copy of Office. So at least makes it better in the event that they do have to call you.
Absolutely. And it really reduces that help desk cost as well. So of course there is a cost around how your help desks operate. So we're trying to reduce that too.
Right. So updates. So there's a ton of, we have a whole section on servicing options coming up, but the updates, as we're alluding to, we've had the challenge of monthly updates. We need to be able to not only make the updates smaller, but also make the changes more predictable. There are 3 different update options that we're going to have moving forward. One that we're going to talk about called Current Branch, which is what kind of consumer builds of Office are getting right now. There's a Business Branch, which is kind of that 3 times per year, every 4 months it gets updated with features that might be as old as 7 months old, and we'll see that in a second in terms of some of the visuals, or we'll see that actually in this session, right? In terms of some of the visuals as to how long it takes for it to get there. And then we have the first release for Current Branch for Business, just to make it a little bit more confusing, but that's kind of your validation up until that Current Branch for Business build gets released. So you can use that in your IT department, et cetera. So you have the ability then to validate what's happening in terms of change management into your organization, what users will see. You have the ability to choose the different update branch that you want people to have. Maybe if they're primarily on a current branch, or if they're in IT, you want them on a current branch. You have effectively a couple of different options that you didn't have in the past with Office 2016.
And again, this is all about moving away from that initial disruptive deployment once every 3 years, and started to give you better control of actually how you service Office going through.
Right. So Current Branch, again, this is monthly. You see that on the screen here. That's what you're used to seeing from not only Click to Run, but also MSI. If I took every single update, I would get feature. I would get basically critical and non-critical updates coming every single month. Now, this is something that is the default in any consumer version of Office. If I'm buying Office Professional for Home or Home and Student or any of those things, I would get this monthly update. But what we've introduced now, this is one option I can do, and this is what I've been doing in 2013 also until now. If I go to the next version of Current Branch for Business, the diagram looks a bit more complicated, but we'll explain what that means, all of these different steps. I have the ability then to take a different path, which this blue line actually means the first release for Current Branch for Business. I have the ability to test that moving forward as it gets ready for the Current Branch for Business 1 build. Big question that we get all the time is, hold on, you released Office on September 22nd this year. Why isn't it in my tenant yet? What do I have to do to actually get that running? Well, the Current Branch for Business initial build goes out in February, because by design, it goes out 4 months after the initial feature set is delivered into the current branch. What does that mean? That means that a lot of people, I would say, leading up to September were panicking, saying, oh my gosh, my Office 2013 builds are going to go away, and I'm going to get a whole new UI, and I haven't tested my add-ins, my apps, and it's going to be chaos. But actually, on purpose, we said, no, We're going to release as a default, you're going to get the current branch for business, and then you'll see it in February. If you want to still use current branch, you can. I just have to install Office 2016 using current branch. Then I'll get the monthly updates. Most people, most organizations tell us they don't want monthly feature plus security updates. They want this kind of 3 times per year model. And what you see here in terms of the upper steps, the gray with the kind of leading navy blue steps, there will be a build in February, there will be another build in June, there will be another build in October of next year. So be in that cadence from now on. It means that all of the features until that February release are going to roll into the February build. And then it's going to go like that. All of the features, I would say that all of the security features will roll into that February build, but the feature level itself in February will be the same as the October very leftmost build. And then the feature sets are going to be at least 4 months out from the bleeding edge of net new features. We'll explain that in terms of more visuals in the coming slides.
So where would you use these various scenarios? So of course we have current branch and we have current branch for business. So for those organizations and those groups inside of your organizations that could potentially use current branch for business, anyone who's on the road, those road warriors, those people who actually, you don't want them coming back through your network in order to pick up an update. They rarely come into the office. So actually, let's point them to our content delivery network and have them picking up from Microsoft, effectively outsourcing your distribution mm-hmm. to Microsoft, giving them the ability to have the latest features as and when they need, because they're not running critical applications. They have a low number of add-ins potentially, and this is a great way to give them the latest features and also to keep them mobile. So there, as Jeremy said, they are available on a monthly basis. We're wrapping security fixes along with feature updates, and it really follows that consumer model. In terms of serviceability, that's once every 30 days. What that means is that we will fix a build within 30 days, or we'll release the new one, which comes in, say, for example, from January to February, then from February to March. But the supportability around that is 12 months. So for an example, again, if you hold on version 16.1, you can hold on that for 12 months as a support model, meaning that you can pick up the phone to Microsoft and say, hey, there's something wrong with Office, and we will respond to that.
But one caveat there is that you're not getting security updates for those 12 months. So you're playing with, you know, another worst force, I guess, in terms of not taking that security update for those 12 months and locking that config. So why you'd want to use current branch for business, because I can keep getting security updates while I pause feature updates for up to 8 months.
Absolutely. And again, current branch for business for those people who are potentially using those add-ins and require a level of validation and testing from IT before they then release and actually gain the new feature sets. So it gives IT and gives the organization more time to get trained, mm-hmm. adopt the products that we have, but also from a communications and adoption change management perspective, it gives the organization, whether it's internal comms or again, IT administrators, time to see what's available, potentially create the communications, and then push them out to end users. So when features land, they know what to expect. They know the business value to their organization of those new features. So this is a great way for them to test and validate. And again, around serviceability, so this is an interesting one. 4 months of mainstream serviceability support with an extended 4 months, if you'd like to. So it gives you ultimately 8 months worth of serviceability and 8 months support model.
So what about the Windows 10? Because it sounds, I guess, if you're familiar with Windows 10 and the servicing branch there, they all sound very similar. So we have, kind of like we have in the long-term servicing branch of Windows, we still have the volume licensing or the MSI-based builds of Office to use. But on the Windows side, they're also releasing 2 to 3 updates per year. They also have the same concept in terms of current branch and current branch for business. So we wanted to make sure that, again, it was very logical as you move to a new desktop, and a lot of people are moving from Windows 7 and Office 2010 to Windows 10 and Office 2016 standard desktop, and you're going to see a lot of similarities between the two ways that both Windows and Office are serviced.
So how about traditional Office? What's it used for? Especially for those areas where potentially they're in research, aerospace, defense, government, where you have air gap systems potentially. You have a whole range of mission critical systems that you need to take care of, and you don't want that those updates to impact how they work. So this traditional MSI packaging, being able to hold on a particular build, and if it's not connected to the internet at all, that's a great way to go. So there are still use cases that are pretty valid for the MSI deployment as well.
Right, and there's still multiple activation keys or key management servers. You can do both models. MAC keys will be a perpetual activation. KMS is still 180-day default activation until asked at the KMS server. So all of that is still the same, probably in what you're doing now with an Office 2010 environment. More or less those same rules carry forward as an option, again, for special systems for Office 2016. In terms of the volume licensing, different scenarios and features that we have, again, like John mentioned, floor machines, things that maybe in a production facility where you have multiple users logging in briefly just to get transactional type work done, it doesn't have an affinity to a specific user. We have a solution actually for that in Office 365 Pro Plus called Shared Computer Activation as well, but there are some use cases where that might make more sense. Some virtualization scenarios, we do support a lot of those also, whether you're using things like Citrix or desktop virtualization. We do have, again, ways of using Office 365 Pro Plus in the exception of things that are air-gapped, like John mentioned. So if those VMs aren't actually able to talk to activation services, then in that case, you'd have to use volume licensing builds as well. So not a lot of updates in terms of what's different. I would say the only real volume activation update that's happened even in the last 3 years is being able to add that as part of a normal Windows Server role, because now we have AD-based activation that started with Windows Server 2012 that we can use for Office. But nothing else has really changed there.
So what's next? Where would you move from here? Well, moving forward, download Office 365 Pro Plus, use the Office deployment tool, get hold of those bits, and start testing and validating in your organization. There's only one way that you'll find out the benefits of Office 365 Pro Plus, and that's actually by getting your hands on it and start testing with those add-ins and those applications. Because, of course, there's a lot of intelligence built into the Office platform, the likes of telemetry, which is one of the concepts we can talk about in our next session in a deep dive, but really gives you a fact-based picture on what's going on in your Office estate, how and where add-ins are being used, and also performance issues as well. So that gives you the tools to be able to say, great, I can now move forward with the latest version of Office.
And one top tip, if you've actually got admin rights on your Office 365 tenant, what you can do now is use first release to actually have the bits exposed to you as a new build of Office beyond the 2013 bits that are there now by default. And with first release, we can actually target that if we want to just the IT department or just a collection of pilot users. So if you turn that on, you'll be able to actually self-install from the portal if you want to. Obviously, and likewise, you can use things like the Office deployment tool, which we'll talk about in the next session, and setup.exe and scripting and all the things that you might use to install that in a more kind of scalable and scripted and automated way. But if you want to enable it now for yourselves, you can go in and turn on first release for just yourself. There's no risk in terms of end users that you don't want to installing the bits. But if you just sign up for a collection or a subset of pilot users, you can do that today.
Absolutely. So that takes us to about time for this particular session. So I'd like to thank you for joining us today. Thank you.
Thank you.